From iAfrican Media, this is iAfrican Bites, a podcast that features commentary on African news, insights, opinions, and analysis with tech industry leaders and professionals. The podcasts are from interviews conducted by the iAfrican team, whether at events or when needed for commentary. I'm Badawun Kotsokwane, host and editor-in-chief for iAfrican.com, spelled www.iafrican.com.
Artificial intelligence has emerged as a cutting-edge field of computer science that is revolutionizing the way we interact with technology and transforming numerous industries. Now, the release of ChatGPT beta ushered in excitement and demonstrated to society at large the power of AI through large language models. Contributing to this body of knowledge is AI research lab Lelapa AI. Lelapa's mandate is to bolster AI research capacity on the African continent for the benefit of developers, researchers, and entrepreneurs. In this episode of iAfrican Bites, we're joined by Lelapa AI's co-founder and chair of the Data Science for Social Impact Research Group, Professor Vukosi Marivad. Prof Vukosi, thank you so much for joining us on iAfrican Bites. It's a pleasure to have you. Now, Professor, the name of your AI startup is called Lelapa, and you know, I'm Soto. You know, my name is Badawun. So it really stuck. It really, you know, stuck out to me that, you know, Lelapa is a Soto name, which means family. You know, why did you and your co-founders rather, you know, settle for this name?
Thanks for having me on here. It's been a while. And Lelapa, my mother's Tswana, so part of my family is that side. So Lelapa also means home.
In that way.
We started this. It's myself and five other co-founders. It's a big team, and in a way, one of the things I found myself saying over the last few weeks is we're trying to find a home for African AI and people who want to work on African AI to have a place that they can do work, spin-off products, and be able to do it here, not on another continent, kind of in a way. We've just assembled a team of very good co-founders who have good, like, you know, great track records working in research and development within the AI space. We were all trying to kind of figure this out of, like, now how do you get to building an organization around some of these technologies?
I love the fact that you touched on this, Prof, and let's keep it with the home theme, because I went to your home. This is your website now, and it wasn't apparent to me when I went through the website what exactly Lelapa was, whether it's a company, a hub, an accelerator, research center. So, what was evident was the AI aspect, you know, but a lot of us experience AI through ChatGPT. Or when we use, you know, tools like Grammarly or Quillbot, you know, for spelling and checking grammar. So let's start here. What does Lelapa AI exist for? What does it do?
So Lelapa is a private research company. That's the simplest way on there. We are gathered around the idea that you can bring in researchers together, work on specific problems, and then spin out little products or widgets across there. So it's not necessarily that you have one product and then you build around that. So why is this important? R&D is something that we know from history, that the more, for example, a country invests on R&D, the better the outcomes for its general citizens over time. So the same way you would think about large companies Google, there are DeepMind, your Facebooks, they all have research arms. And the reason is that you need to invent the future somehow, right? And it's not necessarily on the people who are just looking at your current product, but it's people doing research into the unknown. So what we wanted to do is say, how do we create an African private research organization that can bring in very great minds, provide also a space for people to to do research in spaces around artificial intelligence, and then from there be able to then deliver on different problems. So I think if you've gone to our website, one of our first big thrusts at the moment is on African languages and AI. So just keeping to your comments about things like ChatGPT, those type of systems are very much like, you know, lack
Afrocentric approach or Afrocentric.
Yeah, not even just Afrocentric, but once you start asking them questions and thinking, like, you know, really trying to push them to converse in, let's say, in languages that are not part of these, like English, your German, these high resource languages, they sometimes fail in very spectacular ways. One of the things you will see on our blog was work by some of our researchers. And also, like, you know, research here is not just simply the computer, like, you know, the computing people, but then also linguists who are working within there, where they just ask one of these systems, please count from 1 to 10 in this
Zulu.
And then they just respond and say, good one, good two. And these are kind of the things of showing people, like, that's a simple example. You can appreciate that, like, you know, it's wrong, but then just imagine the other use cases where people might be using it, it's generating something that looks like a response that looks plausible, but it's actually not correct because it's in this low resource language. So we're building then some of the like, you know, getting data, improving the AI models, and then also trying to think, like, you know, is really going big the only thing that people should, like, you know, where we talk about large language models, but sometimes you can really concentrate on something, build a smaller AI system, but then be able to deliver an experience to an end user that is really unparalleled. So we're looking at things in finance, we're looking at things in education, in terms of use cases of these types of technologies. And the reason that you can do that is that you can concentrate on that problem, bring in the right people, do the research for the things that we still don't have solutions for, and then be able to deliver something for some of our customers that they really need. The second one is that, just to finish off, you asked, like, you know, because the research organization, the language or natural language processing is just one of the things. We have, from some of our co-founders, Benjamin Rossman, Pravesh and George, they're in reinforcement learning, where it's these models that can optimize and learn from experience. So there you can things like process optimization, right? So you can look at like, you know, doing fleet optimization, looking at, like, you know, our electricity grid, and then saying, how do we improve this using AI? And those are some of the skills that they'll be bringing in within those spaces. And then the last bit is that you also need to deliver this as something that's polished, that works towards there. So then you also need the development skills to be able to deliver these to people.
Now, Prof, I'd like to zone in on closing the R&D vacuum, you know, research and development. I'm fully aware that, you know, you I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, if you're one of the founders of the deep learning in Daba. Answer me on this question. What is the maturation in terms of AI research on the continent in general? I think you can answer that, you know, whether different parts of the continent are better than whatnot, or
I'm one of the co-founders of the Deep Learning Endeavor, which is a grassroots AI organization that aims to strengthen African machine learning, and both as a space for the researchers and also the developers or engineers. And also a startup that started 3 years later after that, which is Masakane, that specifically focuses on the languages aspect, right?
You know, okay.
These languages, on that one. And so for Deep Learning Endeavor, myself and co-founder Benjamin Rossman were at the beginning of that. And then for Masakane, it was myself and another co-founder for Lilaba, who's Jade Abbott. First up, a couple of kilometers out in the air. One is just R&D spend by countries. Okay. So typically, if you think about places like the US and a lot of Europe, is you're looking at somewhere around like 2.5% of GDP being spent on R&D, right? While I think South Africa, it should be just under 1%, and it's still high. South Africa is the highest on the continent in there, but we would need to, I think, triple to be able, to bring in that. And a lot of the South African R&D funding comes from the government.
Okay.
Right? That is one.
Kudos to the state for that. through the NRF and the many other agencies.
There are many other agencies on there. But then if we're thinking, given where we are right now and the challenges that we have as a country, you kind of have to think about where is this growth
going to come? There's a private sector.
Yeah, and the part is looking at kind of the private sector. Mm. Why is this important? You have a lot of companies in on the African continent, especially multinationals, who go like, oh, we're a tech company and we have an office on the African continent. But what you find, and this is not like, you know, I'm not saying it in a bad way, is that they're most likely legal and sales offices. So the core of the technologies of that organization are not built.
Are not developed here. Yeah,
right. And that again, if you are not doing that, if you're not increasing that R&D opportunity, right? What then happens? You have a young person, they learn about AI, they learn about something like quantum physics. Like, it doesn't need to be on these spaces. When they look for growth and they're noticing that, oh, on the continent, I can't actually be in R&D within these spaces, it ends up being that people then move to to the West to really go do those things. And for us, we lose out because that R&D skill is not here.
We end up just being the end user and not really creating these systems and understanding the engine behind what we're basically using. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And sure, there's the whole thing of making sure you can customize some of the software things and all those things for use cases here. But if we're really thinking about pushing the envelope in what I believe a lot of young people that I've met through the years, they really want to be at the cutting edge, like thinking about new things, thinking about problems that they have around where they live and where they come from in different ways and getting those tools. And if you then go across the continent, I can't speak for every country and all those things, you see similar patterns emerging. But I think through things like deep learning in Daba, Masakane, we tapped into that frustration. And the reason that those organizations have grown from strength to strength is because there's so many people who are really trying to build up the networks, help each other build up the skills. And then now it's like, you know, the natural thing that comes along is like, okay, it's great. I've learned the skill. I've built my network. How do I do this and make a living? And I think part of the reason that the LAPA exists is now to try and answer those parts, right? Because then you have to build up the entrepreneurship. You need to 100%. Make sure you deliver on that part. Then we're trying to figure out that last bit for people to really be able to do it here. Yeah.
You need to take a product into the market and test these ideas and this research and all this accumulated knowledge, 100%. And our prof, our report was released earlier on this year in around February by leading education economist Nick Spall. And, you know, it made national headlines, and it was quite, how can I say, it was quite disheartening because, you know, the findings were that, you know, 4 in 5 grade 4s in South Africa can't read for meaning. Now, you know, in trying to put together a product for the market, can AI help schools, teachers, parents in addressing this reading crisis that we're looking at in the country? Education in general?
Yeah, thanks for that question. Yeah, and I think I'll answer it in two ways. My wife and I over the last almost 2 years now welcomed a set of twin girls. So they are almost two now. And it's been something of trying to think like, you know, how do you really set them up to thrive? And one of the decisions we made was that they should learn as much as possible in a number of local languages, and they'll pick up the English and the other things as time goes on. But then you have to do that. And one of the things you identify as a parent is how hard it is for many people to either find schools that can really, like, you know, especially in urban areas, that will work within your languages that you would like, and then two, also the material. Right. And then I will touch maybe the latter part in terms of material. How do you get books for children in their local languages is a big thing. And even then, one of the things when you do get the books, you identify that, oh, I grew up like, you know, my father being Tsonga, my mother being Tswana. So I can read the books and go like, the way that this is written is not correct. And then you do some research and you find out, oh, it was translated. But the way it was translated wasn't really in a way that's contextual. It's a direct translation. So when you read something, you're like, this doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't have that kind of thing.
And it shows. Yeah, yeah, like, you know, it doesn't have that thing. So it's those things that create problems, right? Because on the of saying that you must create content in a local language that is contextual to the people of that language and culture. So that
100%.
Like, you know, language is more than symbols. It's not just words.
Gotcha.
It's a place. It's a people. Mm. It's a culture.
Mm. It's a feeling. It's an emotion.
So thinking that, oh, translation is the only thing is not enough. You need to have people, you bring people and say, come over. Let's write children's books, you know, for somebody who comes from KZN who speaks Zulu from there that they would appreciate, right? And it's a very different thing than saying, no, I'm writing something from somebody from Venda, like, you know, who speaks Chivenda, who's from Venda, who think there's just things that don't kind of make any sense. So that is one, and that requires that this investment into our languages from basic education all the way to higher education, right? In development and creating a content that can be used by other people. The second one is that, yes, I might talk about AI skills and like, you know, the things I've been worrying about over the last few hours is, you know, getting postdoctoral researchers into my lab and everything. This is the, like, you know, almost the upper end of what it means
100%.
To be in education. But we need the basic things to be covered, the math, the sciences, and the primary schools and the high schools, because then these become our future researchers, right? It's not just, because we do see it on the other side that if people, if students come into the university sectors, which, yeah, you know, that's one of my hats, I'm an associate professor and chair of data science at University of Pretoria, is that then you don't have a lot of local students who come in and say, I want to do a master's, I want to do a PhD within these spaces. So it is concerning in many different ways. And through in all of that, yes, there's these parts of then trying to think, okay, one of the things, can we assist in thinking about translation? And again, thinking about machine translation in a way that also maybe can provide context, right? Mm-hmm. These are now things where now, when I'm sitting and doing research, you note that you can't just have a computer scientist or an engineer in the room. You then need to go to the social sciences and humanities and then bring in the linguists,
100%.
The archivists, and this is also, for me, the very
interesting culturalists. Thing about,
yeah, people working within these spaces, the very interesting opportunities is that by definition, it has to be very multi or transdisciplinary. You can't work alone, right? It is not just a thing. And this is where we're really going to come up with solutions that make sense.
Prof, I just picked up on what you said regarding the lack of, students going for honors, master's, doctorate. Why do you think it's discouraging? A lot of students are discouraged to continue, you know, particularly in AI research on a doctor's, honors, or even a PhD level. Is it the money? Is it the... I don't know. Is it them not knowing that there is such a field?
Thanks for that. I think what I like, you know, identified over the years, especially seeing a lot of young people doing tech hackathons, is that there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of interest within these. So it's you can't, like, you know, it's not, oh, there's no interest. But it takes a number of things to really have a very interesting mix in here. One, like, we have to understand, you have a lot of students who are coming through our universities or tertiary institutions that by the time they're in first year and they have NSFAS, they're like basically a breadwinner at home.
True.
Right. So now they stay within the system, let's say 3, 4, 5 years. And it's very hard to make that decision to say, I would like to continue for another 2, 3 years. Right. While looking like I'm still like a student on a student side.
Very much.
And let's really
no 100%. Let's put that
in context. Yeah,
100%.
Second, we like, you know, we need to, as an academia, really also fill within these gaps. Do we have the role models? Do people see themselves within these research spaces? We are still very skewed. The transformation is something that we still have to work on. in terms of thinking who's there, do they see, do they understand who the students in their classes are, and how they can then think, oh, we just can't tend to think about it from a Eurocentric view, right? Where then if you do, you end up with just like, you know, really the people who are already privileged are the ones who stay within this space. Right. So our job is more than just to teach, but then it's to create this environment that for a person who's really interested, you can find the resources for them to stay within there. You can provide opportunity in the lab at the university. We try to hire students as assistants so that they can work. They can come in also during the holidays and make some extra money within, I think, Lilapa, within hopefully the next year or so. We will have things like internships that are available on there just to allow that people can really thrive.
That ecosystem, ecosystem of interest.
It is not just one side. Like people are like, oh, it'll be the academics that need to solve this. We're like, no, it means that government must rethink the ways that they remunerate interns. Private sector must also take in, when you take in interns, that you really build up the skill, right? It's not just of saying, no, you'll make some photocopies or for things. It's like, no, people want to really work on cutting edge and on those things. And they must be then remunerated accordingly, right? They're 100%. Not just dead weight inside the company.
Now, Prof, Lilapa in April launched its first product to the market called Vula Vula. It means, I think, speak in Tsonga. First of all, who comes up with these names? They're so cool. Like, I'm trying to ascertain. You guys sit together, huddle around, and come up, or do you come up with these names? Because I know you're Tsonga, and you say you're partly Tswana. Who comes up with these names?
I know. I think it's I'll think about when I was an engineer. I did electrical engineering first. And you'd go into like your department and you'll find out the names of the servers and all those things.
Yes.
And you'll have these names. And then there'll always be like, I think maybe programmers also like this to give things names. And there were always like this thing of thinking about scientists from a very Western view. And then those are the scientists and all those things. And what I've seen now with a lot of African researchers is like, no, just to say like, put it contextually to here.
Gotcha.
You can give the name in something that's on there. And I think we are very intentional in doing that, right? And
I love
again,
that.
We're building a tool that is building up language processing for African languages. And it should have a name that reflects that.
100%.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah, kind of on there. And that's where kind of that came from, and there will be more names when other products on there. We don't have a committee as yet that does it. maybe in the future I'll ask the co-founders and say maybe every time before we launch something we can ask the public to submit names or vote on.
No, I think the committee is you are safe. We're for now.
I'm definitely
we trust
not the
you.
Committee. I've got a very nice co-founders and co-workers who came
okay.
up with it. I wasn't there for this one.
Okay, so tell us about Vula Vula.
Yeah, so there I'll give a just an example of what happens when you need to build a natural language processing system.
Please.
Today in 2023. So it's a mix of things. So one is that you need to get data. So you need to have data about something. So let's say we are doing translation. So to do translation, you need to give the machine learning algorithm lots and lots of examples about one language to another. So
100%.
I'll make it very simple. We want to translate from Sesotho to Shona. So now you're going to have to find aligned data. Here's a sentence in Sesotho, here's
a sentence in Tsonga.
Yeah. So
gotcha.
When we think about, what's available on your commercial translation systems, you find that it is very high resource languages because the use case was made, people needed the thing to translate from English to French and all those things. And the data, a lot of it is available. So these lower resource languages, it requires that you work to either gather more data.
Or build up the data yourself.
Build up your data yourself, improve the tools to do to the algorithm so that they can extract as much information as possible on there. And then you need to then fine tune them correctly so that they work in the use case that you need. So you think about those steps. So Vula Vula is building a lot of the Now, background technologies to allow that for different use cases, whether you might be thinking about translation, you might be thinking about extracting entities, you might be thinking about chat on those ones, that people can then come to us as the LAPA and say, look, I'm in this region. I think, like, you know, I have customers who would appreciate really us as a business interacting with them in their languages and being able to provide them products on there. Can you then have access to your API to do this and all those things? And they will say, yeah, well, your language, yes, or the languages you're interested in are supported. And then here's the system that you can use to be able to get into there. And that's what Wula Wula is being built on. It covers speech. There's things that are also being covered in text as well.
Now, this is benefit of our listeners and viewers. Is this similar to ChatGPT? Like, how do my viewers envision it playing out? Like, how do they interact with this tool?
Yeah. So at the moment, it's not necessarily direct to the consumer. There's other organizations that we are working with, and we're like, you know, where they are coming in and saying, oh, I need X. So one is that you could think about, hey, I'm in education and I need to be able to translate in a better way or identify things in, like, you know, in a better way for Isikosa or something like that. So you would come to us, we would then say, okay, we give you access to this to the system for your use case. Here's your API endpoints. You run this, it generates the X for you. And then from there we evaluate, and yeah, you can use this given some cost in any way. So it's not necessarily like, you know, ChatGPT. Yes, it's really gotten into the popular mind just because it's consumers can just use it as it is. But then it's only one use case in this chat way. Not really one use case, I'll be lying, because it's a general large language model. It can do many things, but then, as I said, if you're then in a low resource scenario doing many things, just makes that you just increase your error surface. You're going to make more errors. We can then say, hey, if you're like, you're trying to do translation, our translation system compared to all the other competitors, here's how well it does and all those things, and if you need this, here's the tool for you.
That said, because it's not consumer facing, what's the intended customer? Who are the people coming to you wanting these sort of translation services or translation as a service? Like, just paint the picture for us.
There's different organizations in different sectors. So that's why I talked about finance. I talked about education as being on there. And these some might be looking at speech. And being able to process audio and that's being spoken in our local languages. Some might be trying to mark up documents on that one. It's just that we haven't made announcements yet about some of the customers. When that comes along, it will come up on the website and be announced.
Don't be shy to drop one. Don't be shy to drop one.
kind of on there. Just that you have to be, careful about some of these agreements we've signed, and then but you can, as I say, like, you can think about it, or say, like, you just, if you're staying on the education thing, thinking about DBE saying, hey, we've got content that's about mathematics, it's written in English, and we just want to make sure we can have this content being available again to many more students to be partly, like, you know, to be in Sesotho, and then assist teachers who can then finalize that material, like, you know, because translation is not simply a machine thing. You need the humans also. So it's a kind of a human machine collaboration that happens.
Prof, you did say you do have six other co-founders. I mean, it's Benjamin, yourself, Pravesh, George, and Palonomi. Tell us about your other co-founders. How do you complement each other's skills?
Yeah, so if you start with the CEO, which is Palonomi, she was initially, we worked together at the CSR, my previous organization, where she was a student and as a supervisor, we worked on some papers together looking at social media, but she went off to the master's in Japan in AI, and then came back and was in the banking sector in South Africa building data science tools and teams within there. And we're really happy, like, you know, to have her, because then she can, like, you know, focus on, hey, how do we get these products out there into the market? Jade was at another local tech company, at other companies within there. So bringing that entrepreneurial experience as well. And then you have George. George is like, you know, South African, but now based at Brown University in the US. And he has another startup called Real Time Robotics that he started with a couple of co-founders a few years ago. So he's also been great in like, you know, helping us translate what it means to navigate the funding rounds, navigating Silicon Valley, navigating VCs.
So this is like
because this was something that.
So this is like
this is yeah we had to.
So this is like the African
learn all of these things.
It's like the African AI Avengers coming together and like lit up AI.
So we had to bring in all of these. Different types of people in there, because if you just get academics on one side, it's you're not, sometimes most of the time, not going to have a good time.
So apart from the six of you, how many other people do you employ in Lilapa AI, and what are the type of people are you looking for to join the Lilapa AI, you know, R&D hub?
We recruiting is underway. We've got I think at the moment three full-time employees, and then Beautiful. This is a mix of research scientists, research engineers that are coming along, and then now we're also trying to head up our admin because as founders, you know, when you're starting, we're all trying to do everything kind of on there, but now as we are delivering to clients, you need to make sure your things are proper. And then also now you have investors, and you need to make sure they get they're comfortable with what we're doing and how we're doing it. In the near future, when positions become available, people can go to our website and they'll be on there. At the moment, it has been reaching out to a few people we know out there and then having conversations and seeing if they'll join us within those spaces. So I'm not sure what our 12-month recruiting plan is. If Pilonomi was here, she would be able to answer that. You would know like the raw numbers of where we want to get to in 12 months.
Beautiful. Prof, you've got some really impressive partners. I mean, it's Turn, it's Microsoft, which is one of the major shareholders in OpenAI. You've got the Data for Science, Data Science for Social Impact. These partners, what are their contribution? What's their contribution? What's their support in what's happening in Lapa AI?
I'll maybe use one example. Okay, so on Data Science for Social Impact is our research group here at University of Pretoria. So that, like, you know, and we also have RAIL, which is the one at VET, which is the other lab on there. And then there might be opportunities for students to work on. And then there's also some research that we do together across these spaces where we have scientists at Lilapa and scientists on there working on some things together and then releasing them out there, especially for things that are public and for other people to be able to.
Beautiful.
With Microsoft, there we were very fortunate to interact with their Data Science for Good new lab, which is now based in Egypt and Nairobi. In Egypt and Kenya, on that one. And there it's a part of giving us access to compute. I think there probably will be a press release soon about the partnership. And it's similar to saying to OpenAI, like, you know, the first investment in there was giving them as much Azure as possible to do the things that they need to do.
So it's the computing power to know to process all these algorithms and everything.
Yeah, and build up
100%.
Your AI within there. And then with some other partners, it's either access to market, knowing that, hey, like, you know, when the product is now ready, you want to be able to access the market. So it's again also, you know, the things that you have to learn is that it's not just about the technology is great. You need to have people who can put you in front of the right people.
100%.
To be able to make sure you validate, you test, and then you get something that can then get traction.
Prof, you raised about $2.5 million through Mozilla Ventures and Atlantica Ventures. You've gotten, you know, the green light from, you know, people like Jeff Dean, you know, Google AI. He's been a, you know, supporter of the deep learning in Daba. What will the money be used for? Currently using the money for?
So at the moment, recruiting and growing the organization and building up some of these toolings. like, you know, the tools and the product that needs to be on there. For me personally, it was a very different way, like, of thinking about this. I think I was saying this to somebody earlier. A lot of times when you think about startup, you think about bootstrapped, right? I'm going to build something and then finally raise through something else. So this one was, we've got a team. We know we can do this. And on that part, we just need the opportunity to do it. And we need to raise so that we can assemble this team. And as such, that's like, you know, it's built, the money is going towards building the products, doing the research, and then spinning out what needs to be spun out. And then through that, then, you know, you start building in, bringing in that revenue to grow the organization.
Are you looking to raise more money? Is more money needed to keep growing this organization, to keep, you know, adding this capacity of computing power and?
At the moment, we closed for this round, so we're focusing on building, right? If you're just raising your, it's a very different switch to then saying, let's actually focus on the technology and the research. So right now we're focusing on the technology and the research, and then finishing any administration that needs to be done for our current funders.
Prof, what Delapa AI is doing is really beautiful. And as iAfrican, we really support and wish you nothing but the best. Is there anything that you would like to say to either your investors or people that are, you know, fans of you, or people that's just, you know, encouraged by the work you're doing in AI?
I think on one, and speaking maybe for a lot of the founders, we are very thankful for the support over a while. We hope for your support as we go on into this thing. It's not an easy road. I'll say, like, that's a thing we've had to learn and relearn over and over again. But the point is, like, you know, you want to have an ecosystem. People tend to think like, oh, no, you have to, you're in one space, and why are you sick on us? Like, we really want to have an ecosystem that is thriving so that the R&D is done here and not, like, you know, and in places where, as you say, like, we just become the end users and then things are just dumped on us within those spaces. So do keep a lookout for Lelapa if you have interesting use cases and you want to chat to us about things that you're interested in. You've seen what people might have been working on in AI, and you're thinking, hey, I've got a problem, and I've been thinking about using these within there. Reach out, and then let's see how we can work, and then we can put you on our timelines of saying, okay, this is somebody to talk to. It is not like, you know, we're trying to be as open as possible to people having conversations at the same time yet. We have to be deliberate in a lot of our steps. As you say, we have investors, and then the investors are not just doing it, like, you know, for nothing. They need to have a company that's a going concern.
You know, Prof, about a year ago, I wrote this article, do Android dream of electric sheep? And it was basically around, you know, at the time you had a Google AI software engineer that was, you know, saying that, you know, Google's at the time MLDA was sentient and stuff like that, you know. And I think, you know, outside of that conversation, I think the deeper conversation in that article I was posing to, you know, academia, philosophers and scientists on the continent was, you know, the role that, you know, us as Africans are contributing to the massive data that's been generated to feed into these algorithms, you know, asking an important question: how does, you know, the spirit of Ubuntu look like in an algorithm? How does, you know, our ethos contribute to, you know, ethics and morality around artificial intelligence? And, you know, you can take that and, you know, chop it up into pieces in so many aspects on how, you know, AI technology is implemented, researched, innovated and created products. And the work that you guys are doing at Lelapa AI is really important. And I'm looking forward to the next deep learning endeavor. Definitely iAfrican will be there. Thank you for your time, Prof.
No, thanks for doing, and thanks for having me today.
Thank you for listening to iAfrican Bytes. Please share your feedback with us on our socials. On Twitter at iAfrican. On LinkedIn at iAfrican.com. And check out our other podcasts, The Tefo Mohapi Show, Take Legal Matters, and The Lead Creative. on all podcast streaming platforms. And also make sure to head over to www.iafrican.com. That is iafrican.com/radio. And subscribe for notifications. iAfrican Bites is an iAfrican Media original show produced by Nzalo Mbangana and content producer and host by Don Kotokwane.